The following is presented by the Cheeky Bastards.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers, and welcome to the third edition of Dropping a Bruce, the monthly podcast where we watch every single one of Bruce Willis's 40 to direct video releases from his acting career to see if he took the role for a paycheck and dropped a deuce, or if in fact he took the role and gave it his all and dropped a Bruce. I'm the Notorious Scott K.
And my name is Movie Snob Steve, but you can call me Mr. Smith.
And together we will be your captains on this 40-month journey through the lesser-known movies of Mr. Bruce Willis's filmography. This month's stop is the 2011 crime thriller Catch 44. Mr. Smith, we are now a quarter of the way through the first year of this podcast as we record. Our second episode has not even dropped yet, since we like to record early. How are you doing now that spring has sprung?
Well, work's getting busier. The weather's getting a little bit better. So, you know, and when I say better, we're just not freezing our nuts off anymore. It's still not great. But yeah, so I'm getting a lot of movies watched. I'm loving that. Because by the summer, my movie watching drops a bit because I'm so busy at work. That's why I cram so much in early in the year, yeah? So yeah, I've been watching a hell of a lot of movies though.
Well, I went from like doing 20 plus in January and February to March being like, maybe I got 50, you know what I mean? Like, you're right, it's starting to drop.
Yeah, you look at mine on Letterboxd, like January, I must have watched like 40, 50 movies. You know, March, not so much, yeah. So yeah, but I've been getting a lot watched, and I have these bursts of movies that, you know, there's always so much coming out. There's so much content out there now, so it's very tough to cram all this stuff in, especially when you know, life gets in the way.
It's true. Before we let life get in the way, I'd like to thank all of our listeners who are listening to us on the last of the Action Hero Podcast Network. We really appreciate you downloading and listening to us. Hopefully you've enjoyed the first two episodes. We're about to jump into the third, and that movie is Catch 44. We both have different takes on this film, Mr. Smith. The only reason I know this is, yeah, prior to recording this, I just got out of watching a film. I went to see Air, the new movie from Ben Affleck about how Nike signed Michael Jordan.
I'm really
enjoyed it, especially if you're a basketball fan or from even our era. It was a really interesting look. And I put my little stars on it, and I can remember that I watched it in about 7 months when I had to look back and say, what did I watch this year?
Did I try that?
To remember. And I just happened to see that it says, oh, friends who recently said something. And I saw Catch 44, and I was like, I haven't asked Steve about it. Let me see his review or his stars. And I looked at it, I was like, okay, today's episode is definitely going to be different. We have seen more eye to eye in the first two. And on episode three, I think we are going to split. And so it'll be interesting. So before I do want to mention, I think we started this last one.
Sorry, yeah.
I haven't finished editing the second one. So I apologize, folks, if this has already been, if I ever cover this at the end of the second episode. We are changing up our ratings at the end a bit because I think we figured out that when we say dropping a Bruce, I think we need to specify that we're saying, did Bruce drop a Bruce, as far as did he give a performance? And we'll then also rate it if the movie was worthy of his catalog or if it was a piece of shit. And then that could be a drop a deuce. So, for instance, this movie, we disagree on certain things, but we think that Bruce is good, there could be a dropping a Bruce for his acting. But if some of us disagree on the movie, it could be a dropping a deuce. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, it's not quite as straightforward as you'd think. You know, the film might suck, he might be great,
yes,
or vice versa.
Or he might be.
So it's important that we
differentiate
get that out
early
in the
on.
Open. Yeah, yes. absolutely. We kind of tripped ourselves up on that one at first, I believe. But we smoothed it over.
Yeah. We know we're still early. We dropped the deuce ourselves, folks. That's what happened.
We're learning with you guys. We're learning with you.
All right, so Mr. Smith, this is your, you said you watched this as right before we recorded twice.
I did watch this twice, indeed.
And I have seen this twice. And I saw it a year ago, and then I saw it in preparation, which I'll be honest, I saw it a little over a month ago. I got very excited when we got back to this, and I watched the first three all over again. Your initial reaction to Catch 44, which is doubling up of Catch 22. So it's twice.
See what they did there?
Twice as
tough.
See
what they did there, guys? Okay, well, I've got a lot of issues with this movie, but there's a few rays of goodness shining through. So I find it to be a little. We've often talked about this Tarantino stroke Pulp Fiction ripoff vibe that a lot of films,
we have.
You know, they try and pull off and they can never get away with it. As we've often cited, that you can't just steal from other movies like everyone claims Tarantino does and make them good. So for me, this is one of those movies that is trying so hard to be a Tarantino movie.
100% agree. I told you that when I sent it
but,
to you.
Yes, you did indeed. Absolutely. But I think it falls flat on its face a little bit. It just lacks the very things that make Tarantino who he is. It's not as simple. You can't just throw Bruce Willis in there and assume you're making Pulp Fiction Part 2. But we'll get to that. We'll get to Mr. Willis later.
Yep.
Yeah, there's just a lot of issues with this movie. But you've got a great cast, I'll give it that. You know, we have Bruce Willis, of course, Brad mm-hmm. Dourif, Forrest Whitaker,
mm-hmm.
Jay Wiggum, who one of my favorite character actors. You know, so to start with, we've got those guys. It's not a badly directed movie.
I thought it was actually pretty well shot. I think it's well shot, and everything.
Absolutely, and I want us to say one thing before I forget. I thought it had a great soundtrack.
So that's where I feel like this gentleman, and for those of you who don't know, I host, as of current state, and I will brag on that, the only Tarantino-related podcast about Tarantino and his films. Now, there's another one out there recently came out that's about Tarantino, looking at the films that made Tarantino. Mine is directed at all of Tarantino stuff. And my good friend Steve has been on a couple of times, and we have always hated the fact that people just say that Tarantino steals, does nothing but steal, and it's that easy. What I liked about this film is, yes, someone definitely ripped this off. But unlike the film we talked about earlier with Setup, I think they did an admirable job. They're not in the same stratosphere as Tarantino.
No, I know what you're saying.
But there are shots, and we'll probably get into the close-ups, a lot of shots on lips. They take from them, but I think the gentleman did it really well. Like, for what he was doing, I actually give them credit. If anyone stayed more true to what a Tarantino movie was, it would be this gentleman. However, we will get into why he made Miss Mark. But it also shows that it is hard to do, to steal. But I will give this gentleman admiration where he stole, he at least really tried to capture, much like Tarantino does, the essence of who he was stealing from. Whether he's able to pull it off as good is another story. But I did feel like he did a good job of that.
I don't want to jump the gun on this because there's a lot to unpack. Even if whether I liked it or not, there's a lot to unpack in this film. I don't want to just start rambling about the things I did like, the things I didn't like.
Yeah, so here's what we're going to do, folks. We're going to jump right into it with our What You Talking About, Willis kickoff.
What you talking about, Willis?
Just the facts, man. Just the facts.
The film was released in 2011, written and directed by Aaron Harvey, starring Forrest Whitaker, Bruce Willis, Melon Ackerman, Nikki Reed, Deborah Ann Woll, Shea Whigham, and Brad Dourif, with a runtime of 94 minutes. It holds a 4.6 rating on IMDb and a 14 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. Three women are sent to intercept a major drug deal at a diner at 3 a.m. and get the money. Simple, save for Murphy's Law. Anything that can go wrong, will go wrong. Anchor Bay Films presents Catch 44.
I'm gonna tell you a little story.
Back in the old days, there was cowboys and Indians. One of these cowboys got captured by a big Indian chief by the name of Running Bear. Running Bear got very close.
And that is the moment they lost himself.
The cowboy thought Running Bear was stupid, but he wasn't stupid. Sorry, cowboy.
You know you are much too special to be here.
Tell my boss that.
It takes a special girl that knows how to do what you do.
More for me.
I already have a job. Something big has come up.
I will never let anything happen to you.
What seems to be the problem?
No car trouble?
Takes down by American.
Someone's running a shipment along Mel's route. That's where we come in.
Other side of the swamp. Look for an alligator crawling across the Chinaman's back.
Toss it. Just be cool. take the door. Guess I got the trucker.
Not even going to say it because y'all know what this is.
What the hell is going on here?
Why is Mel doing this?
You know the policy.
Policy? What policy?
Fuck up once, you're done.
Insert this.
No, wait.
So Mr. Bruce Willis plays Mel, a pecan-loving, red nut hugger-wearing local crime boss with some sort of facial rash or disease that we're never told about.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah,
here's the funny thing is I remember watching it the second time through going, oh, that's right. I was like, oh, I must have forgotten why it was. And I get through the whole show and then realize again, that's right. They never fucking address it.
But why should?
Here's the thing is I think it has something to do just subtly, I think he has a nut allergy. And that's part of the problem, is he has some type of a nut allergy, but he can't stop eating these fucking pecans, so he doesn't give us a... He has a permanent nut reaction all the time.
Yeah, I think that has to be the case, really. Because otherwise, why is either thing there?
Here's the other thing. Since my very first notice, as soon as the film begins, it has heavy QT pulp vibes. Huge, right? So,
not in a good
here's...
way.
Well... We'll get into that. However, Mr. Ving Rhames, his character, Marcellus Wallace, obviously those who know, the real reason he's got that bandit on the back of his neck is because he had some kind of bad spur or he cut himself when he was shaving,
yeah,
so he wanted to cover it up.
The script. Yeah.
And so then they just put it on and Tarantino liked the way it looked, so they kept it. So if we're going to be ripping off Tarantino in this film, which we are the entire film, for the majority of it, we are going to, that could be his thing. His technical Marcellus Wallace character is Bruce Willis's character Mel.
Yeah.
We just have something that we don't talk about. And you know what, though? Give him credit. He didn't try to do some band-aid. It bothers you, but it is a smart... This is where I give credit. Is if I'm going to give credit to Tarantino for the subtle way he's able to take things and do it, this guy did it. It was funny because every time you see him, you go, that's got to be a nut allergy problem. And then you're like, but he's still going to eat the nuts. So you're kind of like, fuck it. Fuck it. He's eating the nuts. Fuck it.
Yeah, well, otherwise, why would it be there? So that was an assumption I'd kind of, I agree. I'm sure that's what that was all about.
Now, I do understand why you have a bit of an issue. And the tough part is this film opens up like Pulp Fiction a bit. And I don't think it's the girls acting. I don't think that. I know what you mean.
No, I'm not saying they can't act. But they start off acting tough.
No, but they don't pull the Amanda Plummer opening, right? Amanda Plummer, I don't want to do that. Yeah, very sweet. And then all of a sudden she jumps up and every motherfucker, she just starts going to a whole thing. And you're like, whoa, you're like, what the fuck? These girls kind of come in already. We're supposed to be like, they're tough. And I think there's the fault. It should have been more conversational. Girls having fun, girl talk kind of thing, and then all of a sudden, boom, they're holding up this diner, which we go back and forth.
Yeah, the misstep is that he does that later instead of sooner.
Agreed. But because, once again, how do we steal from Tarantino but also try to make it our own? And this is what he tries to do, is instead of us leaving the diner and coming back to it, he takes Jackie Brown, he takes Rashomon, the Jackie Brown part of Rashomon, which isn't a Tarantino thing, it's from Rashomon.
We see
the three versions of why the girls do what they do. Yeah. So someone gets shot, and when they get shot, we flash back to their beginning, and that becomes the beginning of the movie. And we start with them, we follow them to this moment, and then someone else gets shot, and we go to their moments to get here. Like, I don't hate him for that. I give him credit. He found a way to tell Tarantino-style story, but found a different way to do it, which is what Tarantino does, right?
Yeah, but
he didn't do it as good. I know.
No, absolutely. No, I totally agree. Because, like, when Tarantino plays with time and situations, he does it to create tension.
Yes.
And all of that. This guy just does it because Tarantino does it. And that's where I had the problem. But, there's so many things, even at the beginning, the kind of the Mizaloo like spaghetti western theme song at the beginning. I'm like, that was was too on the nose for me.
I put in my thing, it's a bit heavy-handed and not nearly as smooth
as Q-Tip. Yeah, that's it. It's not like I've seen worse, and it doesn't make me vomit. It, you know, wasn't like, oh my god, but it was just like, oh, I see what you're trying to do. You just haven't got what it takes to pull it off, and the story to me just didn't feel significant enough.
Well, yeah, that becomes the problem. It's when we get to basically his third story, when we get to our main character, Miss Ackerman there. Yes. And then you start to realize where everything's unraveling. That's where he loses the strength, because I'm going to be honest with you. Again, I'm a Tarantino fan. So I was like, I knew immediately what this guy was trying to do over a year ago. And I was like, okay. But there was some good acting. I thought it looked really good. This guy did a really good job. And this guy, but I keep saying that, but Mr. Harvey, Aaron Harvey, I thought he did a decent damn job.
Well, he did a
pretty decent job. I mean, it looks really good. But like you said, it is very heavy-handed. You know what this is? This is what they call fan fiction. This is a fan fiction. Yeah. This is his love letter to a Tarantino.
It's a bit self-absorbed.
Yeah, I mean, but it's a little too much.
Also worth pointing out, because it came out in 2011, it is one of the producers is 50 Cent again.
I told you that. I think 50. There's gonna be a trail of quarters.
I'm sure at this point he's just lending his name to things just to get on the ladder.
It's the same year setup, so at least in this he at least did a little better job. And you know what he did? He had the courtesy to not take the Forest Whitaker role, because Forest Whitaker is really good in this film. I really enjoyed him. And again, not his fault the way some of the stuff goes, and then it kind of detracts his character towards the end. But I enjoyed Forest Whitaker in this film. I enjoyed all the little things he did. There's a lot of Tarantino in here. And like you said, it starts off. So what they do a diner open. These three girls are talking. And again, I don't want to sound like some kind of like high-fluting Tarantino fan, because I don't want to come across like that. But if you're a Tarantino fan, and you see the beginning of this movie, you start to, and I think that maybe what pulled you out is my second time through, I enjoyed it more because I knew what they were trying and I didn't hate him for it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't think he was trying to lie to me. I realized, oh, he's absolutely 100% riffing on Tarantino.
Yes.
Now, and maybe because now that I'm doing the podcast and I'm going through this year of looking at how Tarantino's gone through people, it's like, you know what? I'm going to give this that same kind of eye and see how he did with the stuff he's trying to do. And, oh, like you said, the opening dialogue is really heavy-handed.
Yes.
You're like, he's really trying to shoehorn in either that opening diner scene in Pulp Fiction or even the car scene. Like, he's trying to make this conversation not feel like it's forced, but where Tarantino was able to do, where Tarantino said in Pulp Fiction, I've got hitmen. What do they do when they're actually driving to the job? They're not talking about the job. He realized that his dialogue has to be about the job because he pigeonholed himself to that. The story's got to be about why they're at the diner
A lot of the problem I have with this movie is none of it seems natural. And ironically, to me, and at least, the story is just so middle of the road. I don't think it earns, because, you know, the thing with Tarantino is he funks things up, you know? This guy is to a pretty bog standard movie, and he's handled it in a bog standard way.
Yeah, he didn't have the third act figured out.
Yet, he loves movies, this guy, I'm sure. I'm not going to diss the guy flat out.
No, because he sets up great shots. I mean, he definitely takes a lot of some from Tarantino, but they look good. Like, he's not just throwing in a close-up of some lips talking, you know, and not pulling it off. He pulls it off pretty well. He pulls off some of his character introductions pretty well. He pulls off a lot of the stuff that Tarantino does well, but the one thing he can't pull off is the writing. And this is one of those movies I thought this would vindicate you in, that visually he's able to try to take what Tarantino's done and put it in. The problem where Tarantino does the same is Tarantino then writes it to make the visuals work for the scene, as opposed to the visuals are the scene. I'm just going to make a scene around the visuals.
Yeah.
Because the first two stories we go through, you're in it. You're like, okay, where's this going to go? And then it's the third act. We find the third girl's reason why they're there. That's where it starts. That's where it loses its cards. You know what
really?
I mean? Like, you thought it was going to be more. And, you know, and even some of his character dialogue, they almost talked about, like, this is what it's about. Like, even the characters themselves seem to be self-aware. And he seems to be self-aware, being
this
like,
this is a very self, yeah, this is it. This is very self-absorbed, self-aware kind of But I will, where I will credit, it's not winking at the audience. It's not like, you know, it's trying. It's...
Yes. Oh, 100. I mean, it is. And like I said, the first 2/3 of the film, you'll be really invested.
I am shitting on this movie a bit, but I've seen it twice. I didn't hate it.
He's also on a diet. I would like to. He just started a diet. So
I'm just a little fucking tense right now, okay?
It was at a diner. He's a little pissed off that the whole thing's about food. This guy's eating cashews. He's pissed
off. Scott. I'm talking right now. Yeah. Yeah, no. I am shitting on this movie a bit. But it's, you know, only because, you know what? A lot of it, I think, is it's almost like you had all the, you had a lot of the pieces there to the jigsaw puzzle, but you were just missing a few corners. You know, or something.
Yes.
But, you know, you obviously attracted a decent cast. I mean, there's no bad actors in it. I don't think there's bad acting, though.
I mean, might not be great dialogue sometimes, but they act the shit out of the script.
Again, see, that leads me into another thing. The dialogue I just found flat. You've got this funky, colourful film with these funky, colourful characters, and the dialogue is just bog standard,
separates. This will sell our argument for you and me. This is separates him. It's his fucking ability to write dialogue. He may take some visuals, but his ability to write dialogue is what sets him apart. And this movie is that vision.
Yeah.
This is the first gentleman I've seen that I can think of who really went after taking on a Tarantino film and actually visually almost pulls it off. Really does do a great job with it. Shoots the shit out of this film. I give him hats off for that. Like you said, he figured out how to get even cheaper needle drops in that work for the visuals and the story of this film. He got great acting in it, and they act the fuck out of this movie, everyone in it. But where he falls short is his ability to write the dialogue because he's trying to steal from Tarantino and just can't do it. And his story falls flat in the third act, which a Tarantino film usually excels at that moment. It leads you going. It pays off at the end. And this one, it farted. And you're just like,
But even though I'm not a fan, ultimately, of this movie, there's some good stuff. There is some good stuff. Like, as you mentioned earlier, Forrest Whitaker is
amazing in this film.
Shea Whigham as well. I love that guy. He's a great character actor and should be in a lot more stuff. Like, the girls were not bad actresses, but I just felt like the badass chick, mean and moody thing did not suit any of them, actually.
Well, you know what part of it is, and I don't want to sound like this may come across as, I don't want to sound like male chauvinist because it's not meant that way, but they don't show the softer side or the vulnerability side. That works for every character, whoever you are, especially if you're going to be a powerhouse, right? Like, what sells the bride, what sells some of these people is there's that vulnerability or that other side of them, and all we see them is as hard asses. And another thing is they made a mistake somewhere. So that's the thing. It's like they're trying to do the Tony Rocky Horror getting thrown off. Like, we don't know why they're being sent on this job. But I think what makes the movie fail in that respect, in that dance, he would have been better suited to showing us how they fucked up, showing us a little more of their vulnerability to find out. Then we would have been more on board. But they literally come out tough as nails. Not a bad thing. I'm not having no problem with women coming tough as nails, but it's like they're always there tough as nails. And what failed the last movie we talked about is guys try to be tough as nails and they were just dead in the water. And you're like, it doesn't sell all the time. You know what I mean?
Not that simple.
Exactly. No, it's not.
It's complicated, you know. But yeah, so Bruce.
Well, I was going to get into him. We'll get to him in just a second.
Oh, you're going somewhere else.
Well, the main of the movie starts off is we get a surprise. We get our Marvin surprise, which is one of the cast members gets shot and like killed instantly in the beginning of the movie. And so I was like, okay. I was like, balls, ballsy. That was like good.
Can I
good
just start. Say this quickly before I forget?
Yeah.
I actually thought she was the badass of the chicks.
She was. She definitely was the tougher nut for sure.
She.
And then we do the whole, find out we're getting there, and we start doing the dance. But we meet Forrest Whitaker, I think, in the second set of girls, if I'm not mistaken. We get him the second time around, or maybe it is the first time around. I don't remember. He is playing this when we start off, the southern, almost like a Bible salesman. He's got this whole, he's affecting this accent, and he's got these glasses, and he's playing this, shucks kind of guy.
And he's all very stuttery, isn't he?
Yes, and he's sweating. Oh, yes, and this cop pulls up. It's so good.
They're not a great cop, because Forrest Whitaker's got a gun in on the back of his jeans, hanging out the back of his jeans. I don't know if you noticed. And you're just like, you may want to notice that, Mr. Policeman.
That's what hooked me, is Forrest Whitaker He is really putting in a performance here.
Like, yeah, but when doesn't he? When doesn't
true.
He? You know, we're talking top.
He really was killing it here. I'm like, I don't think he gets enough credit for
no, he's
how good
royalty,
he truly
though.
Is. Oh, he absolutely
is. He is acting
is.
Royalty, you know, to have him in your movie. Because you know he's going to give it 110%.
And he's worth every dime they paid him for this film. To me, that's what saves the movie. The story may fall apart at the end and in places. But he is chewing up the scenery. And not in a bad way. He every time he comes on screen, you're on edge. Because he feels a little bit like, not as crazy, but he feels a little bit like Javier Bardem's character in No Country for Old Men, where you just don't know which way the wind's going to blow on him and when he's going to change his mind. You just are always uneasy with Forrest on screen because you just realize instantly, you're like, ooh, he's just not all fucking there. Yeah, so he's just not all there, which is in a good way.
But he's a very likable presence.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
throughout
so
the whole film.
Just in everything, but in this as well. Yeah, he's playing a pretty unhinged psychopath.
Yes.
But you like him.
Yes. Who may have had a crush and taken it someplace in his own mind that wasn't supposed to go.
Yeah.
We'll get into a second why that falls apart. So there's three vignettes. We get them from the girls. Our first girl, I won't give away the name and who she is, but one gets shot and killed in this. So what the story does also is these girls suddenly stand up and they seem like they're robbing this diner. Heard this story before? However, it goes sideways, or I'm sorry, as the English say, it goes tits up really quick. Really quick, it goes tits up.
Very goes well tits done, up sir. Very quick. Well done. You win.
And one of them gets shot in the tits, and unlike the bride, she was not hit with rock salt. She was hit with a full barrel of a shotgun, and down she goes. And we flash back to how this day starts for her and where we go from there. And then we ride with her to this moment again, and we get the violence again. And this time we focus on another female character who also gets shot and goes down, and we go back to her story. And then the main story we center on is played by Malin Ackerman, who, as I said before, she was really good in Zack Snyder's Watchmen. Loved her in this. She's fantastic in this. Yes, and I thought she was absolutely good in this. I thought she was pretty good. Like, you know, she was playing, best way to describe this is she's playing Beatrix Kiddo if Cameron Diaz was the character. Because she has a bit of a Cameron Diaz look. She has a bit of the actor, but she's not playing, she's not as Uma Thurman's.
She's got some sass.
She does. Yes. Well, she meets Mr. Bruce Willis. And we're going to get right into it because he's a spectacular character. And God damn it, I love the fact of his choice to get
Matt. He's a fucking mess. He's a fucking mess, this guy.
She gets dropped off by Forrest Whitaker, and we learn about how they know each other. And we finally get Mel. And he's actually in the beginning of the movie, but this is the more important one. When we meet him for the first time.
Yes. This is his true introduction.
She walks up to a door, knocks on it. A pretty attractive Asian female, I believe. Right, or is it Hispanic? I thought it was Asian.
Hispanic
woman opens the door, speaking zero lick of English. All of a sudden, out comes Mel in a silk robe that only goes down to about maybe top of his thigh and red nut huggers. I mean, full on red banana hammock nut huggers. And he just comes out, looks like he's all coked up. He is just losing his mind. His hair, he still has his hair at this point. It's spiked up in the air. And just the way he plays it, and he's eating these pecans, and like he's throwing pecans at the one girl.
He's got his little blonde soul patch
he
as well.
He does, and he tells
the girl
never to open up the door again in his house. And I don't think she understands him because she's only speaking Spanish, and she's just there for, you know, his amusement.
She doesn't know what's going on.
But he's fantastic. Like, as soon as he comes on screen, I was like, God damn, he was killing it. He and Forrest Whitaker, like I said, everyone in this film is acting. Of our three movies so far, he is having real fun. He has had real fun in this and Assassination of a High School President. He does a great job in setup, but he's having a lot of fun with this character. So whatever they pay him, whether it's a lot of money, he earned it because he really, he is bringing everything he can to this Mel character. And I'll give the guy credit. He doesn't try to play him as Marcellus Wallace. He's not trying
to
be that. He's trying to be almost the anti-Marcellus Wallace.
Do you know who I could imagine playing this role if not Bruce Willis?
Who?
This is Bruce Willis as Nicolas Cage.
100% agree with you. You know who else I would have put in there? A younger Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
The three of them.
That kind of unhinged. Kind of very unhinged.
Unhinged, but yet still not going over the top. You know what I mean? Like throwing in, like enjoying the role, but not becoming a farcical version of the role.
No, because he's quite erratic. and a bit of a mess, but when it comes down to business, he's focused, you know, and that's not a...
He's got eccentricities that he does that are eccentric when they need to be, but it's not like we just focus on him eating pecans in his facial
and throwing them at people and yelling at young women. And...
Oh, and just walking around in nut huggers. Yeah, I mean, when he walks out, I mean, it's a great entrance. So far of our three movies, I know, you know, Do I Slap the Dick Out of Your Mouth is a good entrance, but this is his best entrance so far. This is his best introduction so
far.
For
me personally, I think he's in all three movies so far, he's on form.
I think you know what we're going to say about his acting performance at the end, but yes, no, he is absolutely on form. He's not the shell that I think he becomes in a couple of years down the road, 10 years down the road that we will talk about.
Well, we'll see. But he is a great character. This is a great character, definitely. You know, obviously not to jump too forward, but the same with Forrest Whitaker. And
I mean, it's hard to talk about the film without jumping all over the place because the film itself, like a Tarantino movie, jumps all over the place.
Yeah, but just for no reason.
So
that's
the basic of this story is at some point, Forrest Whitaker saw this girl played by Ackerman, who is a good pickpocketer. And
she's a waitress at a strip club.
She's the day waitress at a strip club. Let's put that out there. Because every time she leaves work, it's midday. So I don't know where she is or if they can only use that strip club during the day to use the outside. So they said, fuck it. She works in the day. But she works the day shift at a strip club.
Yeah, so she's a pickpocket who's a waitress, who's day waitress at a strip club.
Who gets harassed by some guys who won't leave her alone, who think she's also a hooker. And then Forrest Whitaker character steps in. And then from that moment, because she's a good pickpocket, I don't know why that suddenly Mel thinks that makes her good enough to start working for him selling cocaine.
Bad writing. That's why. Bad writing. Just fucking say it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it makes no sense. There is no reason for him to go, oh, you can pick people's pockets?
It's not that it makes no sense. It just makes little sense. It's just a bit ropey.
In fairness, the man is wearing red nut huggers and is continuing to eat almonds, even though he knows he has a nut allergy. So I guess there is a bit of a bridge you could cross to say, maybe he might just pick her because she's attractive and he's hoping to throw his almonds at her as well. What ends up happening is, as we learn, is somehow they fucked one of these jobs up. They don't say how. They don't say anything.
We know nothing about the job.
Nothing. And then the job they're sent to do is someone is trafficking drugs through Mel's area. There's going to be a truck. They're going to meet at this diner at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, it's going to be a trade-off.
Yeah, and they're going to steal the truck. And that's the end of it.
Yeah.
Well, it goes tits up immediately. Which should signal to everybody that something's rotten in Denmark immediately, but it goes tits up quickly. We then go through each girl's story to get us to why they find, well, basically some backstory. It's basically an entire movie based on the love, and this just came to me now, of the gentleman who wrote this and directed this, his love of the scene between at the beginning of Pulp Fiction where they're driving in the car and talking about burgers and Amsterdam. Because it ends up being mostly them talking and driving and we're learning about them without the same charisma, excitement, and just like, oh shit, moments that we get from even that small scene where you're just like blown away by the dialogue and them talking and it feeling so real. It's mostly them just kind of bitching and... For one of the girls, feels like this. Why is he giving us this job? It's a lot of we have to do some kind of exposition to get us through the story, which is where it falls flat. As opposed to when you watch Pulp Fiction, you just went for the ride. You had no idea where it was going. Like most of those films, you get on board and you go, here we go, see where this is going. And then you get to the end and you go, oh shit. And then you look back at it and you go, yep, that's how we were always going to go. But you just missed the breadcrumbs. And this guy's not leaving breadcrumbs. He's dropping loaves of fucking bread off like it's a truck.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's just, for me, things just seem to happen. Like when Forrest Whitaker kills the cop.
Yep.
Why?
Because he needs the cop outfit.
Really?
Look,
that
listen,
wait a minute.
You asked me the question. I just gave the obvious answer that we have in the film. I told he shot the guy because he needed his outfit for some reason.
You can't get a fucking fancy dress cop outfit. You had to go to this elaborate scheme to get a cop... to stop so you can shoot him in the back of the fucking head.
Well, hold on. I'll take you through the whole thing.
No.
So he shoots the guy in the back of the head to take his cop outfit. Then he drives to, which we don't see, but he clearly drives to some quickie mart and kills the fucking owner of the Quickie Mart in the shitter for reasons we don't know, to only to...
That's what I'm saying. The
reason it happens is the key...
We don't know why he did this. We don't know why he did that. Because it keeps the... Because it's a badly written fucking movie.
Well, because it keeps the guy's partner occupied at the thing because there's a murder there now. That's the only reason. But then he shows up, I guess, to finish off everyone at the diner.
We don't know.
But he's double-crossing Mel at the same time. And then he shows up and what's her name doesn't know why he is. And then we get the flashback of him.
Then Shay Wiggum pops out of the back with a shotgun. And we're supposed to give a fuck about who he is. And we don't even know who he is. This is what I'm saying.
I get it.
Everything's just so inconsequential. So like...
The worst of it all. I can slip past all that because we slipped past setup. And like I said to you, I listened to you today.
But you didn't,
somewhat
did you?
Defend
you didn't.
Setup.
No, because you...
A little bit.
Yeah.
But the thing I think you are missing...
No, we'll get to that. I'm gonna shut up now because I don't want this to descend into
argument. We're jumping into the end because this is where all everything happens.
Let's not do that because then we can't hear anything. So you carry on.
Can we at least give Bruce Willis, since this is about Bruce Willis, this whole podcast, even though I feel like we just talk shit about the movies he's in, and then bring him up that he's in it. Bruce Willis signed off on them talking about him in the film, Meta Style,
yes,
and having his song, Respect Yourself, be played in the car.
Gonna save it for later, but since your radio sucks, I got us some tunes. And lucky for you, some of us still live in the golden age.
Yeah, what age is the golden age?
Oh, the 80s, and not just the 80s, but Bruce Willis in the 80s.
No!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Get ready for Respect Yourself like you've never heard before. Hey, Kara, even you might enjoy this.
Hmm?
Oh, Bruce Willis?
Kara, you gotta get
it. Oh,
no.
No, I'm not supporting this.
Girls, it's not funny.
Come on, Kara, get some learning.
Wow.
Let's go.
You guys think they're funny, don't you? Tess, take the shit out. Throw the shit out the window. This is my car. Take the shit out.
Guys.
God, why are we being pulled over?
Just chill.
My hat's off to you, sir. When that happened, for the second time you're seeing it, I was in joyous glee. I was like, you know what? I don't care what people say about Bruce Willis. I'm sure he did. But he knows that is also a laugh moment.
Oh, no.
He had the...
I had that album, by the way.
Mr. Wheeler sent me the tape. I have the tape now.
Great album.
He had the wherewithal to understand that his music career, much like Don Johnson and some of these other guys who had these one songs back in the 80s, early 90s, is a bit of a joke. No one took him serious. Great harmonica player, but let's be honest.
I was then going to say that exact fucking
great
line.
Harmonica player, but
he's
just
a great harmonica player.
Amazing harmonica player. But let's just, you know what? Look, Bruce was a better actor than he was a singer.
It.
All right?
But
for
singer.
Him to be in on the joke, to be okay with it, to be okay with them playing his music, to be okay with all that, I absolutely loved it. I give the director credit for getting that, for getting Willis to sign off on that. I obviously got paid for to put the song up, but that's a bit of a nod, like, hey, Bruce, well done, sir. Well done, indeed.
I agree. I'm
it's one of the better moments in the film because of how much people young enough aren't going to be like, well, I don't get this. And why are they talking about Bruce Willis? But those who know. Those of us who grew up with it, we all know. We talked about it on the Cheeky Bastards when he did Hudson Hawk. He got a little big for his britches around that time.
He was making
crazy movies just so he could say one line. He's making songs. Like he got Die Hard.
He got drunk
on Die Hard, understandably. But he had his moment where he fell a little bit off the cliff a bit and fell down and hit his face a few times.
He fell pretty quick. But there is that great little bit in the car with the Bruce Willis Respect Yourself, which came out on Motown, by the way. He's no slouch, this guy.
I'm not saying that. But again, it's because at the moment when he does it, he's John fucking McClane. The man can shit go cufflinks at that point. Everyone's giving him whatever he wants. And then the train doesn't exactly stay on the track and he gets himself back on. Yeah. I'm just saying he never released another album like that. That's all I'm saying.
Anyway.
that's one of my just fun moments. But getting back to this whole bizarre ending, the thing that doesn't stick, it's not the fact that some guy comes out of the back, because that happens in lots of movies. All of a sudden, some guy, shows up out of nowhere. Oh, who's this guy?
He shows up out of nowhere. That we're supposed to give a shit all of a sudden about someone we don't even fucking know.
Here's why he shows up.
We know why.
He's doing a Tarantino film. What does every Tarantino film that he knows have to end with?
A Mexican standoff.
You need three people. At least three.
No,
you got
the trick of it is you give a fuck about the three people. You don't give a fuck about any of these people.
Listen.
That's my point.
What about It's easy to do. Are you having a tough time understanding? It's easy to do this, Steve. It's easy to do what Tarantino does,
Steve. No, but that's why. No, you're misunderstanding me. That's why I'm saying the movie's a fucking turkey.
I know. I'm being sarcastic.
Because he can't do...
I'm feeding you your own... All Tarantino has to do is take a few of these things. It's easy. Everybody can do it. I'm saying it's not.
It's not easy.
That's why he shows up out of the back.
Pete's over here.
This guy over here. He's also in these other shows. He's out here. He's got a gun. Boom, boom. We got to be. Yeah, you know. But then Forrest Whitaker shows up, and then we get the whole flashback of why he's even into this, which is like he's fallen in love with this girl. Now, look. It seems to me that the moment she met Ronnie, which is his character's name, is a moment that you don't forget because you're working for Mel at his strip club. You know who Mel is. It's like if you're on The Sopranos, you're working for Tony Sopranos at the Bada Bing, all right? Paulie Walnuts catches you stealing, and he says, oh, by the way, Tony would like to see you, and you drop him off. You fucking remember that because she had to think in the car on the way over, she could be being murdered right now. She could be getting killed for having the audacity to rip people off at his establishment, and he doesn't get a cut of this. So when he shows back up, and look, and this is not trying to be anything but what the reality of it was. Forrest Whitaker's a dark gentleman. You don't forget Forrest Whitaker, especially the way he's playing this guy, Ronnie. This is a guy who stands out. He's not just some guy who's like, excuse me, ma'am, Steve would like to go see you, and you just forget about them. He's a unique character. You don't forget about him. And not only that, like, is there like a gold teeth? Like, how does she not remember him the minute he pulls him over the first time? Another creepy fucking thing.
It's badly written, that's why.
thanks, Captain Obvious.
I'm changing my mind. I fucking love this movie, man.
Steve, listen. Doing a Tarantino's easy, friend. Listen, get your head out of your ass. It's easy. Anybody can do it, all right? Anybody. It's easy. You just take a couple of scenes, you slap them together in the film, bada bing, bada boom. It's over with. It's in. You're done. All right, Steve, come on. But that was the thing that's where you know the film is falling apart because the end of the film is, Boris Whitaker's in love with his girl. He knows Mel's pulling a burn on him, which really seems like a really elaborate burn in the first place.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Here's why I like the movie more than you do. I know a lot of this is, it's not Tarantino. It kind of vindicates the things we've been saying about it. But, I mean, it's really well acted, really well shot, and he pulls off a lot of good stuff. And Bruce Willis, in the 5-10 minutes he's really in this film, is spectacular. Even when he walks in with that suit at the end, right?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Forrest Whitaker and him are, and we get a great scene, at least with him and Forrest Whitaker. Forrest Whitaker is fantastic in it. Even the guy who just comes out of the back, he's good. And, like, everybody is good in this film. Everybody. Even if the film itself really hurts from its writing. Which, once again, I hope will get all you Tarantino detractors to realize it's not as easy as you fucking think it is. And stop being spoiled by it. But they do a great job of really performing. And it was it's a fun movie. Here's the difference between this and The Setup. I had fun with this movie in a good way. Well, yeah, I can pick holes through this thing. We could sit here the whole rest of the time and pick holes in it. But because of how well it was acted, I still went along for the ride. It wasn't, like I said, to the third act when the wheels come off and you start to go, this is the payoff. It lessens the rest of the movie, especially the first time you see it. Would you at least agree with that? Like, when you first start seeing it, you're like, okay. I mean, you have to have been born in a dark room and never seen Pulp Fiction to not realize almost within the first 5 minutes of the film going, okay, we're pulling a Tarantino on this. This is Pulp Fiction 2.0.
Yeah,
we're going to try to do Pulp Fiction.
To push back slightly, I would say, but the setup, isn't trying to be a Tarantino movie. It's trying to be a typical
gangster film.
Well, not really a gangster. They're kind of hoods. They're not really gangsters.
Oh, they think they are.
Well, no, that's but every 14-year-old kid in fucking New York thinks he's gangster. We know the difference. But this is trying to be a Tarantino movie and it fails. That's just trying to be a generic, you know, hoodlum movie. And it is a generic hoodlum movie. So in that respect, that's actually more successful. Because that
I disagree. Because this person actually was shooting for something that of high mark.
Maybe
five. The other one was just like, hey, they're going to give us some money. We're going to throw some people together. We're just going to make another shitty straight to DVD. No one gives a fuck about movie. This guy actually, in his mind.
But that, in that sense, that's my point. In that sense, it succeeds. Because that is exactly what it is.
But he was,
but
this is trying to be to succeed, right? So when you actually go. Like with Tarantino, when he
did his first movie,
but
you fucking didn't do what you
Yes, but you know what? You tried to go for the pros and you fell short. This the other clowns didn't even try to go for the pros. They're just like, hey, Little League's good enough for us. We're gonna stay in the Little Leagues.
They knew their place.
But he has a much better hand. Like I said, what he falls is he can't write. His writing is not as good.
Kind of helps if you can write a movie. If you're gonna make a movie.
Visually, this is a really good looking movie. Absolutely, it is. Look at Avatar. That's all it takes. Avatar made billions of dollars because it looks like a great screensaver with very little plot or very little story or very little anything
think,
of consequence.
Yeah, but if you think something's good because it makes a lot of money, then we're on different fucking paths.
No, but what I'm saying is sometimes all it takes is for it to look good.
That's all it takes. Not this fucking movie.
I actually think this is a better storyline than Avatar. Avatar just wants listen to Cheeky Bastards to feel how I feel about Avatar.
But available this has, wherever you get your podcast.
I give this guy credit for really trying. Now he may have failed, but I give him credit for shooting for the fucking moon as opposed to being like, hey, we should go
do
another.
We don't do participation trophies over here.
He didn't get a participation trophy. The other guy's
fucking
looking
right. He doesn't.
You gave the other guy's participation trophy because they shot low and they made it low. So you're like, hey, here's your point.
That's my point.
But artists are supposed to be taking a shot.
That sits along other shitty movies. They're fine. This guy thinks he's Tarantino and he can't even fucking sit up properly.
But he's better than the setup guys. Way better than them. I would rather give my money to this guy.
But they're not making a Tarantino
movie. They shouldn't try to make any movie, is what I'm trying to say. This guy at least is trying.
If you think this is a good movie, that's fine.
No. I didn't say it's a great movie. I'm saying
I didn't say great either.
This gentleman's attempt at striving to make a movie.
Hey,
he got great visuals and everything.
I don't.
We opened it up with Curtis 50 Cent Jackson doing his best Morgan Freeman voiceover. This one at least came out saying, hey, we're going to try something fun. It's going to look good. We're going to try. We may fail, but we're really going to try. And I can at least admire that as opposed to, hey, this guy gave us some money. We're going to throw some people's names in this, and this is really going to just basically suck, but thanks for the money. That I have a problem with.
No, I don't.
I have a problem with wasting my time. I don't have a problem with you trying something and failing.
I have problems with people who make shitty Tarantino movies. I have a problem with people who make shitty Tarantino ripoffs. I know you don't, but I do.
I have a problem. I would say that this is the first person to really, at least aesthetically, try to get it. You even said yourself, looks good, great acting, good soundtrack.
Most movies
look good. Where does it fall apart? In some of the story.
The writing.
How about this, though?
All of the writing.
At least there is some writing. The other movie we watched had zero writing. No writing.
That's not true. You criticized the film because a racist called someone the N-word. That's economic writing. That's not bad writing.
It was lazy writing. Lazy writing.
That's economic writing. We're talking about a straight-to-video farty little movie, and
I don't believe this movie.
And then you say this is good.
But this movie wasn't trying to be straight-to-video, just like Assassination of a High School President wasn't trying to be.
But it was.
We don't know what happened in the financing and the rest of the
it
stuff.
It was a bad movie. That's what happened. They weren't going to spend any money on advertising for a dud movie.
How about this? This movie, I guarantee people listening to this are going to like this movie way better than the setup. They're going to actually send you hate mail for having them sit through the setup.
I know people will like this more, but that doesn't make it a good movie. A lot of people liking something doesn't make something good, and I'll fucking die on that fucking hill.
I think in a couple of years you look back and say it's better. As we get down this journey, you'll look back and see this better.
I'm rooting for the little guy, yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Here's what I've learned, being friends with this man. Is he stubborn? I'll give him credit. Because the funny thing is when he defended the Crystal Skull, the man will fight you to death. A couple months later, as he has time to go by, he goes, you know, maybe I was wrong about that. He's stubborn right now. It's fine. A couple months from now, we'll get back on it after we watch a few of Morty's.
My bottom line is, them guys made a shitty little movie. This guy's made a shitty movie too. I'd rather watch the shorter one. I'd rather not be tortured by someone trying to riff on someone else, ride someone else's coattails. That's just me.
They're not in the same ballpark, I will say that.
No, however, you're being facetious now.
They're in the same ballpark as far as...
That's smart. That's smart.
They're not even in the same ballpark.
No, you're not.
But they are in the same ballpark with Bruce Willis is good in both. He's good in both. He's only on screen short.
I think he's in this movie for about 17 minutes, something like that.
And he is good in all the scenes he's in. You're actually happier to see him in setup because he really carries it more, 100%. This one, when he's not on screen, you don't miss him because he's not just the best part, which is a good thing for him. He adds to the film, in my opinion, where when you're in setup and you're having to plot along to get to him finally being on screen and bring you like, oh, there he is. Thank God he's back on screen. Someone's going to act. In this movie, he's surrounded by people who can also act, and he adds to it as opposed to being the only thing in it.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but the thing is, this is the difficult thing that we need to address, is that none of these films that we've reviewed so far, then none of them are Bruce Willis movies.
I don't know if there's a trilogy coming up.
Funnily enough, a friend of mine said something to me the other day because he was watching one from much later. And he said something along the lines of, I'm not even sure if Bruce Willis was even in it.
I know. Yeah.
So we've got that to look forward to.
Yeah, I do think that's going to be the norm.
Like I said, you know, I don't think that's fair to compare setup to
Catch 44.
Just anyway. Without being like, well, one was good, one wasn't. That's why you can't compare them. Bullshit. Fuck that. I'm talking about... I don't think they're the same kind of thing. They haven't got the same goals. They haven't got the same cast. I mean, how you could get these people in your movie and it fail as well? I mean, because, you know, these films, they're all going to be pretty much failures, I think. You know, you've got... I mean, to have Forest Whitaker, Brad Dourif, Bruce Willis, Shea Whigham in your movie, and for it to be a film that, like you said, you know, no one's probably seen this movie.
No, I don't think many people have.
No one's ever said to me, hey, I tell you, you like Bruce Willis, don't you? You should check. No one's ever said that.
I'm actually surprised it didn't get more of a release because, like you said, there have been bigger movies out there that have failed harder than this film fails, and yet they got the release. And with the cast at the time in 2011,
Them's the break. Just like our first one,
2008. How'd that not hit the screens?
Yeah, the positive to me is it was short.
Here's a positive, folks, real quick. I don't think any of these films that we are going to watch are going to clip 100 minutes. No, I just don't think they're going to. I don't have a feeling these movies are going to be clipping.
I think you
over
might
100.
Have to edit this episode down because we are going around.
I actually think this episode might go longer than the films we're going to watch.
No, look, like I say, neither films are good. Neither of them. And you shouldn't watch either of them. We've saved you.
I disagree, just over three hours of your life.
Now
you have to watch them just to see if Steve knows what the fuck he's talking about or if the cheese is sliding off his motherfucking cracker.
You know what a parable is, right? Like out of the Bible. So a long time ago, these cowboys and Indians were involved in a big fight. American Indians, pre-casino. Big fight. Big fight. Arrows, bullets. You know how it goes. One of these cowboys, let's call him Bucky. Bucky gets himself captured by one of the Indians. Not just any Indian, the big Indian, big world famous fucking Indian, Chief Running Bear. So Bucky thinks he's fucked. Thinks his life is over, he's gonna be killed. But Running Bear, instead of killing him, he takes him back to the tribe. And he forgets all about being a cowboy. Gets all its cowboy ways. Old Bucky doesn't want for nothing. As you can imagine, him and Running Bear got very close. Very close. Running Bear makes Bucky his consigliere. Bucky makes heavy wampum. You know what happens next? He makes a mistake.
He just started to get restless. Yeah. He didn't have enough.
No.
He starts forgetting everything that Running Bear had done for him.
He looks at Running Bear and he goes, look at this motherfucker. Drinking too much fire water, smoking too much peace pipe. I can do it better than him.
He just says, fuck it. Then he starts fucking Running Bear. And he fucks him. And not no Brokeback Mountain kind of fucking. You following me, Ronnie? The moment that he starts to fuck Ronnie Bear, he loses something.
Do you know what he lost?
He lost fucking respect for him. Respect.
Right.
He's looking at
lost respect. In that moment, the cowboy loses everything.
Favorite scene.
My friend, what is your favorite scene from this steaming pile of dog shit that you hate so much? What is your favorite scene from it? What's the one scene that had a kernel of corn in it that you're like, hey, oh,
you know,
pull
what?
This nugget out.
Do you know what? I did, in full disclosure, I found this very difficult to find a good scene.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
Hey, Jimmy Mookle.
If we don't have the same fucking scene, then you are watching the wrong movie.
Okay.
Go ahead. What's the one you find?
Personally, my favorite scene was with Tess and the two scumbags in the strip club.
Okay, where we find out how she meets Ronnie.
A, we find out how she meets Ronnie. B, we find out how sassy she is. And B, they're the typical kind of guys you get in that kind of joint. So, you know, it kind of covers a lot of ground. You know, it's economical. A lot gets done there.
How can you tell Steve's old? Everything's economical. Hey, turn the heat down. What are we thinking? Hey, outside over here.
Well,
oh,
give him the economic
climate. Close the door
over
there.
Hey,
those jeans, I've worn them 20 years. I'm going to keep wearing them. Economical. You think I got kind of money for jeans? Oh.
Well, No, but it covers a lot of ground in that.
I get
that's, you.
You
know,
nope. Yeah, I get you.
You know, because she comes along and she's all kind of like.
It's her character introduction, like, really.
And in that scene, you know, she's just doing her job, isn't she? Yeah. And obviously, one thing we haven't addressed is the fact that she's a pickpocket. Did we mention
that
earlier?
Yeah.
We did. Okay. So she's a pickpocket. And you can kind of, in this situation, because actually there's a scene earlier in the film where she picks a guy's pocket and he tries to pick her up too.
Yep.
So these are all basically scumbags who tried to pick her up, and that's why she picks their pocket.
Yeah.
I might be wrong. I did kind of get the feeling that if you were a nice guy, she wouldn't pick your pocket probably.
But also, if you're a nice guy, are you really hitting on a girl at a strip bar in the afternoon? Probably not.
No, I'm just saying. She wouldn't probably rob just a Joe Schmo.
This is true.
These are all scumbags trying to. Thinking because she works in a strip club, she's a fucking whore.
But maybe she's like our buddy on Bullet Train, and he nicks things he can't help himself. Like, he just has to. He just has
maybe.
To steal it.
Maybe she's a klepto.
He just has to steal it. Yeah. He can't help himself.
Klepto Tess. I don't know. But yeah, and like you say, that's where she meets Ronnie, and that's where Ronnie is because he's crazy as a shit as rat. So he thinks we connected. And
he's
and
Fruit
she's
Loops.
Like,
but then she doesn't remember.
So that's I just like that scene because it kind of like, it's the introduction of Ronnie. You see how sassy she is, and you see that these guys basically deserve to have their pockets picked because they're borderline psychopaths anyway.
Fair enough. Mine is actually the right answer, so I'll give it to you. It's when Tess meets Mel at his house, and we get to see the great
Bruce
fucking Willis come out with nut huggers. He's throwing pecans at girls. It's fantastic.
It's the best.
Oh, come on.
It's the thing with Bruce Willis in it.
Look, it's the best scene because it's funny. Because you don't expect Bruce Willis to walk up with nut huggers.
That's the first thing I'm for.
Some kind of fucking allergy reaction, and he just can't stop eating almonds. Yeah. And he's like, boom.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
No, the first, when he opened that door, I just thought, Jesus Christ, what a fucking mess.
Well, like I said, when we first watched this a year ago, we thought we were going to do this podcast, and I watched, I was like, oh, yes. I was like, this is the best introduction. I was like, if the rest of these introductions of Bruce Willis's character could be this good, I'm going to be excited. Nothing's going to beat the nut hugger. I'm just going to be honest with you. The nut hugger, peanut allergy, almond thrower, and a girl who can't speak English. Folks, that's the fucking gold right there. You watch this for just that scene. Just, if you want to listen to Steve, you believe him, you just fast forward to that moment, and it'll be worth the 3 minutes you sat there and watched it. You'll never lose
I like
that
the
minute.
Hot blonde. He likes the scabby old guy. What does that tell you?
He just likes having his pocket picked by women. Look at who's the creep now. I'm just saying.
Hey, I'll take anything I can get, mate. Tell you the truth.
Best one-liner.
I'll kick off best one-liners. I'm going to be honest with you. It's from Bruce again, and it's at the end of the film. When he's talking about this guy who's hanging out with Running Bear, he goes, he starts fucking Running Bear, he fucks him, and not no Brokeback Mountain kind of fucking. Just fucking.
I knew you were going to do that. I
loved it.
I knew it.
Funny thing is, I didn't remember from the first time I saw it, but when it happened the second time, I just started laughing hilarious. It's like they gave Mel, look, of all the bad writing thirds we've agreed on, some of his lines are the best. Like, the person was like, look, I'm writing good lines for Bruce. Like, the one thing I can do is I'm writing good lines for Bruce, and he's got some choice lines. He just happens to get.
Yeah,
2011.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, maybe he wrote like 2 pages of dialogue that was worth it, and it all went to Bruce. So, hey, I'm a happy guy.
No,
funny.
No, I'm not going
to. Oh, over there. Hey, there ain't no Brokeback Mountain fucking her right over here.
Do you know what? When I heard that, I thought Scott's going to definitely fucking choose that.
This is so fucking funny. All right. What's your favorite one liner from this dog turd movie?
Again, struggled. I specifically didn't choose that line because I knew you would choose that line. You do it again.
Look, it's not going to be as good as that film, right? No, we're not going to have to spoon through 2 hours of figuring out how to figure out to knock it down.
I will say, Billy, played by Shay Wiggum, he's like the barman, is he? Or like the kitchen something. Help? Or... No, we didn't even fucking know.
He's the dishwasher with a shotgun. That's all you need to know, pal.
Everything he says, that's my answer. Literally everything he says was funny.
He's a really good character, even though he's in it for sure. Like, there's performances in this thing. Like, they are really going for it. Even with all the dialogue, they're really giving you the selling it. And I liked him. I mean, he's a good character.
He's a great actor. And funnily enough, another guy who's in Boardwalk Empire.
Loved
like
him
guy,
in Boardwalk
like,
Empire.
Doody Gay.
Yeah.
Doody Gay.
You do it again.
Like that guy from Assassination of a High School President. So that's another little connection.
Yeah, yeah. And about the same time, too, because both movies, they're around the same time with the show, too. So there you go.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, so honestly, like literally everything Shay Wiggum says, he says, I think he name checks a couple of movies, too, doesn't he? He says, I'm going to turn this place into fucking Boogie Nights.
He does.
He says that.
Of course.
And then he says something about, I'm going to fucking shoot you up like Thelma and Louise.
Yep.
He says that.
Yeah.
And then he says something along the lines of, I'm not that stupid. I didn't even make it through high school. Something like that. Because he's just this very simple man. Well, you know, he's a fucking dishwasher with a shotgun coming to theaters very soon. You saw Hobo with a shotgun. I want to see Dishwasher with a shotgun.
Best performance.
Well, guess we don't need to ask this question, but who is your favorite performance in this film that you will now own in your collection?
Difficult. I actually, now this is, a, this I did, no, I found difficult. I found this difficult because I had a choice. Like, with the other things, I felt like, Jesus Christ, best scene. There's, like, one good scene in this film. But best actor or best performer.
Yes, best performer.
Blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you what, I'm going to say Forrest Whitaker.
That is mine
the
as
best,
well. Yeah.
It was the best act.
Because he's in it the most. Like, he is in it the most.
He's in it the
as
most.
Far as,
he,
as far as the acting
most,
ability.
And he has the most to do.
Yes.
And
yes.
He flips between different accents because he's
and he plays with this and the psychosis and it's really subtle. He's not, you know, going over the top with it, but there's definitely a psychosis break for him clearly. When he gets pulled over and then when he pulls the girls over, like he really is
exactly
good
and then when
that,
he shows up at the diner, he's like three different people.
Yeah.
And when he's in the strip club as well. So actually it's four, that's like he's in all these situations, he's a different sort of he's just a different character in each sort of almost a different character in every scene.
Yes.
To be fair.
Yes. Yeah. He definitely acted the shit out of this fucking film for sure.
Yeah. So, my favorite actor.
Mine as well.
Favorite character.
Now, my favorite character, again, I know this feels like right on the nose, but I fucking love Mel. I just love Mel. I love that this is a villain that Bruce gets to play. That's so against normal villain type. Like when not to bring up the setup again, but like the setup, it's kind of like the way he played the principal in Assassination. He plays it off center, and I love that fact. And you don't know he's going to play it that way.
Yeah, when you just said that about, when you said he was your favorite in this. No, absolutely. In setup, every moment he's on the screen in setup, it's a different movie.
Yes.
I mean, and you feel like when Bruce Willis is in setup, you're watching a different film.
Because he's
than
acting.
You've been watched.
yes.
Well, no, because he's Bruce Willis. He's
Agreed.
Got the presence
Agreed.
That we all adore, yeah. And B, he's That's why he's Bruce Willis.
Yes.
You know, that's easy to sometimes, we all do it, where we love these actors and actresses, and but sometimes you forget why they're so good. You know you're going to get your money's worth for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a good reminder in this. I mean, that's like, you know, in a previous episode of Cheeky Bastards, where you talked about Die Hard.
Yes.
And we were kind of like, this is potentially the best action movie of all time, ultimately. Not just, because you were saying it's the best. Well, no, because you were saying
Christmas,
it's the best Christmas.
But
we were actually...
It may hold two titles, yeah.
Yeah. But after we did that episode, I watched Die Hard again, which you kind of feel like you've seen more often than you have, because it's such a familiar... But man, Bruce Willis in that movie is just... No wonder he became who he became.
Yeah.
And like I say, in the setup, in Assassination of a High School President, and clearly in Catch 44, he is such a presence.
Yes.
And he's
only on screen for such a small amount of time, which makes it even more impressive because he's not having to carry the film.
I imagine in all three films, he's probably in it for about the same amount of time.
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah. But he makes
the most of all. So far in all three movies, he's made the most of all three appearances.
Absolutely. He shows up.
He does, in this bad boy.
Like I say, that cracked me up when he opened that door. I just thought, Jesus Christ, he looks like such a fucking mess.
Yes.
Yeah, so no, I agree.
Your favorite character, sir?
Is definitely Billy Shay Wiggum.
Okay.
Because I did genuinely think the film, you know, there's no one bad in the film. We know that. No one puts in a bad performance. But he's electric. He's pretty electric, but he's so unhinged with his flat top and his moustache and his shotgun. He just bursts onto the scene. Because really, if you think about it, the Mexican standoff probably lasts about 15 minutes.
Yeah, we probably argued too much about the movie as opposed to that Mexican standoff does. That was one of my notes. This is a very long Mexican standoff.
Yeah.
Like guns seem to move between the room quickly sometimes.
But it's kind of like exposition meets Mexican standoff, isn't it? There's like a lot happening in this because they need to wrap it up, basically. Yeah, so he's my favorite character. I was going to say he's my favorite character and actor, but just to mix it up, we need to give Forrest Whitaker some love. I think
he's really, really good.
He's always really good. Really, the only real trouble I had, I don't think Shay Wiggum delivers a good enough line in his whole bit to be a peach of a line. He delivers them all well,
yeah,
but he never really says anything. That's like a zinger, you know.
I don't mean
he never really. He just swears
no
a lot.
Brokeback Mountain kind of fucking.
Either. He doesn't get. He has his movie references, but they're not as on point as that. Clearly, but you know, just when he said, "I'm not that stupid," and I didn't finish high school, that just cracked me up. But yeah, so Shay Wiggum for me.
The moment of truth.
All right, now this is where we're going to split it, because now we're going to be asking, did Bruce drop a Bruce or a deuce? And then we'll talk about the film overall. So I'll let you once again kick us off. Did Mr. Willis drop a Bruce in this film, or did he drop a deuce when it comes to his performance?
This is Bruce at his Bruce-est, given he shows up. He must have read this script and was like, I'm going to be all over this.
Yeah.
He was rabidly into this, I think. You know, all three films, as we've addressed, he's great in all three, and he plays someone different in all three.
Yes.
You know, so these are a good example of Bruce Willis's range.
Yes. And it's hard to do when you have bit parts and you're only on screen for so long. You have to make the most, and he has done it.
I think he's literally in each film for about 15 to 20 minutes, maximum. Definitely, for me, this is a Bruce.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
I agree 100%. Obviously, I picked him for almost every other thing. When he walks out in the Nuthuggers, he is on point. He is on point. As you said, in these first three films, he may play the heavy and almost, I mean, he's not really the villain in the first, but from being a principal to being two different types of mob bosses, he is three different characters completely. He really, really does an excellent job in all three of these films so far, and especially in this one. And every time he's on screen, you're like, oh, you just, like you said, you start to relish more because he's not on screen as much. you get to see his real acting. Because to be memorable in such a small amount of time, you have to really give a performance. And he, I think, puts
that's
in more
measure.
Work than
yeah.
being
yeah.
The star. Yeah. Because the star's not
absolutely.
Asked to
that's
do
the
as
measure
much.
Of, that's, yeah. that's the measure of a good actor. Who yeah. can just show up, do one scene, get the fuck out, and be the most memorable
yes.
part of it. Absolutely.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
And now we will split for sure on this one, where we have obviously differed throughout this entire episode. I do not think this film is dropping a deuce. I think it actually drops a Bruce for the reasons that my counterpart will argue against. It is a straight-to-DVD film. For being a straight-to-DVD film, it's actually quite enjoyable and entertaining, considering straight-to-DVD films are supposed to be considered B-movies or second-rate movies, and you're not supposed to get much out of them. I actually think, because of the acting, because of the filming, because of some of the stuff that's in this film, while it does fall very, very short of it trying to be a Tarantino film, I do think it's very enjoyable and worth at least one watch for just even some of the things we talked about, or even at least to see if the two of us even know what the fuck we're talking about. So I, unlike I'm sure my counterpart, I actually give this film a dropping a Bruce and highly recommend you at least watch it once, because Mr. Willis isn't going to have any more performances. And so far, if you're going to watch the first few movies we talked about, you're at least going to enjoy his performance. And I actually think there's more to enjoy from performances in this film than our previous film.
This film was definitely dropped a Bruce.
And I now will let my curmudgeonly good friend from UK, who, even though we sound like we don't get along, I appreciate this man's opinions because I do not want an echo chamber. So, Mr. Smith, tell us all while we're fucking wrong, you're fucking right, and we can go fuck ourselves. What do you give this film? A Bruce, or is this a motherfucking deuce?
Okay, I think...
We should put the video up, because the entire time you're giving me this look, and now he's like, you step back, you're like, let me think on this a moment. Like, you did the David statue for
I'm
a second, the thinker.
I'm just trying very hard to not repeat myself. I think ultimately, okay?
Yes?
Here's a way of putting it, which I think you'll appreciate. I know we've
go right ahead.
I know we've been shitty to each other, but I can only I love that I can be shitty to you.
Well, because we respect each other. I know yeah, that at the end of the day, I'm not going to hate you because you don't like something I like. That's ridiculous.
I hold your opinion and taste in films very, very fucking highly. So with that said, I fucking hate you. No, with that no. Here's a way of putting it, which I think you completely understand.
I love that you are a tap dancer, and I love this. This is making me excited. You're like trying to get through a minefield. You're like, well, what do I say? Go ahead. Let's hear it.
No, this film disappointed me more than Set Up did. That's kind of what I've been tap dancing around.
Okay.
This film had more potential, okay?
Fair.
Set Up reached its full potential because it didn't have much.
You're being kind.
So,
yes, I agree. I see what you're saying. 100%.
That's what I'm really getting at here. Is there's no way if you guys out there in internet land, if you guys and gals watch Set Up, I don't think you'll be disappointed with it because you should already have pretty low standards from the get go. Whereas with this, I had higher standards because of the talent I could see that was involved. And ultimately, it just extremely disappointed me. So look, just to go all out on it, on Letterboxd, where I do review all my movies, A, for two reasons, because my memory's terrible and I can't remember what I've seen. And B, I do like to keep
I get it, I get it, yeah.
Okay, I gave Set Up 1.5 out of 5. And I gave this 1 out of 5. I gave this 1 out of 5 because it had potential to be so much better and didn't reach it. Set Up, I gave 1.5 out of 5 because it knew what it was and it was that thing. Now, enjoyment is subjective. You know, someone might watch this and love it. You know, no one is likely to watch Set Up and love it.
Well, yeah, guess well.
Yeah, so I'm a bit, just in full honesty. So this one disappointed me. That's why it's got a lower, because it had more opportunity. Set Up had no chance. So that's why I'm a bit kinder to it. Charitable to it, let's say. You should watch both, I think. That's the fun of movie watching, and that's the fun of these kind of podcasts, is... Of course, I'm full of shit, and I'm wrong about everything. To someone, You know?
Yes.
This is
agreed.
How,
I'm 100% then the same with you.
Yeah,
yes.
This is the fun of it, yeah? You may very well watch The Assassination of a High School President and think it's garbage and a rip-off of Heathers. Or, sorry, not Heathers, Brick.
Fair.
Was the,
yep.
You know, but I'd be surprised. But, you know, you're entitled to that opinion. It's all subjective. We know that. We threaten to kill each other all the time. You know, it's just fun. But, yeah, so, like I said, this one just disappointed me more. And that's why I'm a bit more bitter towards it than Set Up, which was destined to be a dog turd tonic and was.
So is this a deuce or a bruise? You still?
Yes, absolutely. I've completely not fucking answered the question.
You have absolutely done great political satire and just danced around the actual answer.
Yes, this is my vote for me.
Yes, vote for me. Did he answer what he's going to do?
Yeah. What did he say? Did he answer the question?
Invading China? I don't remember him saying
this. He's a genius. Yes. He didn't even say anything. I'm going to say this is a deuce.
This film was definitely dropped. A deuce.
And I would highly suggest you watch it for two reasons. One, to see if either of us know what the fuck we're talking about. Because, as he said, subjective. But also, you should watch it for Bruce Willis' performances. First three. Some of the movies you may not be able to sit through, but he has delivered. If you're a true Bruce Willis fan, up to this point, I think with the one thing we definitely both agree on is you should definitely check out the three movies because he is really good in them. Even if the movie's dog shit, he is not. He has not just taken a paycheck in these three. He has really put in some performances, and I think you'll be surprised at how varied they truly are. And if you enjoy more of this shit that we do, you should also check out our Cheeky Bastards podcast because we really get cynical and take shits on stuff. We really enjoy that.
Come on, you love that stuff.
Yes, you do.
You can't just talk about the things you love all the time. Boring.
And please, reach out to us. And wherever you get it, you can either find our socials and DM us, send an email. If you find our page on Anchor, you can go and actually leave a voice memo and we'll play them. Just tell us why you either agree with one of us or disagree with one of us, anything. Just enjoy the conversation. Jump into it because we don't have any more films. His most recent one was just released, Assassin, which we'll cover in another 2 years. But unfortunately, the great Bruce Willis, we will not be able to enjoy going to see him in the theaters anymore outside of maybe some anniversary re-releases of his great films. So let's just have fun. We had a good time doing it.
And we hope you'll join us again for the next one.
I
can only apologize for my perspective.
I can't apologize.
I hope you take it lightly. Because that's how I mean it.
And that will do it for our third episode. Please feel free to reach out to us on the show's socials, which can be found in the show notes, and tell us what you thought about this film, how you feel about Bruce as an actor, or even to let us know what you think about the show. We'd also greatly appreciate it if you'd give the show a like, leave us a review, and follow the show on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network, where you can find other amazing podcasts dedicated to such iconic action stars as Stallone, Lundgren, Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, and Seagal. The link to the network can also be found in the show's notes. So won't you please join us again next month as Steve and I will be reviewing Bruce's role in 2012's action thriller, Fire with Fire, to see if he dropped a deuce or if he dropped a Bruce. Until then.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
This has been a Man with an Exceptional Beard production.